Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Today on the show, we welcome Bruce Maples of Forward Kentucky, and we'll tell you a little bit about why in just a second. But he is the publisher of Forward Kentucky, which, if you haven't heard of it, is a really great website for news about Kentucky politics and just news about Kentucky in general. And the interview was really excellent. We were very glad to welcome him to our show. Before that, though, Jasmine's going to tell us about a hate crimes bill that's being pre-filed for next year's legislative session, and she's going to tell us a little bit about Jim Justice, an update to the governor of West Virginia and the issues he's had in Kentucky. And then, of course, I'm sure you didn't miss it, but yesterday was Election Day, so we'll go through all of the results to all of the issues that are facing Kentucky this year. So, without any further ado, let's get it started. All right, before we jump into the news, Jasmine, we do want to announce that we invited Bruce Maples onto the show because we are going to partner a little bit closer with Forward Kentucky. They already post all of our shows on their website, but we are going to actually start loading our newsletter, My Old Kentucky Newsletter, onto their platform, and we're going to start featuring a few more of their stories in our newsletter, and we'll probably start featuring a few more of their stories and maybe some of their writers on the podcast. They're doing a lot of the same kind of stuff that we are. Their mission's very similar to ours, and we thought, why not work together? We've been planning this for a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months at this point, and I'm pretty excited. You excited?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, definitely listen to the interview with Bruce at the back after the show. But yeah, just wanted to get that out of the way first. But Jasmine, tell us about hate crimes.
All right. I'm going to try to get through this pretty quickly because we have a lot of election stuff to talk about, and that's what everyone wants, right?
Probably. So,
Jason Nemus and Jerry Miller have pre-filed a bill to include homicides to the current hate crime law. Their proposed amendment would also include attempt crimes and solicitation crimes. So, for example, attempted murder. You know, someone didn't die, but someone tried to murder someone. This obviously comes after the tragic shooting at the Kroger in J-Town where a white man came in and targeted and killed two black people.
Right.
Kentucky's hate crime law only serves as a sentencing enhancement, so there's no hate crime charge. If you're prosecuted under a hate crime law, it's only for sentencing purposes, not
right.
for, you know, a separate charge in itself. The federal hate crime law is quite a bit harsher. But as it stands, Kentucky's hate crime law does not include homicides, which has been a subject of, you know, news surrounding this case. But it includes rape and assault and a few other crimes, but not any type of homicide, not murder, not manslaughter, not reckless homicide.
Weird. That's kind of, was that weird? That's weird.
Yeah, I do think it is weird. Jason Riley of WDRB tweeted an article that he wrote in 2010 and said, you know, the legislature was put on notice that this law was flawed in at least 2010 when he wrote this, and he actually interviewed multiple state legislators for the article who were essentially saying, I don't really remember why we didn't put it in, or that essentially they were saying it may have been an oversight. But that article was about a white defendant who stabbed a 17-year-old kid named LaMartez Griffin. And the prosecutor was asking to use the hate crime law for sentencing purposes, even though it specifically didn't include homicides.
Right.
And so obviously the defense attorney said, you can't do that, judge, because the law says what crimes you can use it for, and homicides aren't one of them. And the judge asked her, why do you think that is? And the defense attorney, who has been one of my colleagues, stated, judge, I think that possibly the General Assembly, in their infinite wisdom, didn't realize exactly the extent of what they were doing. So
Jasmine,
there's some shade thrown.
Have you ever said anything that snarky to a judge before, ever?
I don't know. It's hard to say. You get comfortable in front of judges sometimes,
right,
when you see them all the time.
Well, I mean, she's not wrong.
But I thought that was like kind of a nice little dig. But she's also right. You can't prosecute somebody under a hate crime law that doesn't include the crime for which they're charged.
If you don't want to get charged with a hate crime, just make sure you kill the person is kind of a wild side effect of this. So
right, and yeah. I don't know why it wasn't included, but, you know, Jason Riley's pointed out that, hey, you knew about this
mm-hmm.
when another hate crime happened in 2010. So they pre-filed that bill. They will both still be in the legislature next year.
Right, yep.
And so I think as long as people don't forget about this, and I don't think they will, I think we'll see this pass.
Yep.
Next year.
As long as it comes up, and I think it probably will.
Right. So that's short story number one. Short story number two, the West Virginia governor, Jim Justice, is back, and his coal mine is causing flooding in eastern Kentucky. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about the curious case of the West Virginia governor who owes several states several millions of dollars.
Right.
But he's back in the news again. A home that's about a quarter mile downhill from one of his surface mines had extensive flooding damage. And according to the Energy and Environment Cabinet, households near the mine site have been experiencing flooding over the past 2 years. And state inspectors have found that his company was at fault for that. The mine site was supposed to be reclaimed in 2015, but it's remained unfinished, basically.
Mm-hmm.
In 2014, the state entered into agreed orders with the company to resolve all the reclamation violations and then other civil penalties. And the agreement was that those issues would be resolved, reclamation would be finished by September of 2015. That obviously didn't happen. They got an extension until March 2016. That came and went, and then they had another major flood in June of 2016. His company's attorney said that the flooding may just be an act of God because of the heavy rain that Eastern Kentucky has experienced. Because there's something in the law called an act of God, and that
right.
means somebody can't be liable
mm-hmm.
for something that they couldn't control.
Right.
So they're saying it was just all the rain, but
not this massive hole that we cut into this mountain.
Right. But there's an issue with the high wall not being fixed. And state inspectors also cited diversion ditches that are like filled with debris and sediment that are causing water runoff.
Right. Right.
So right now, because it's still not been fixed, the company is accruing a $1,500 daily penalty.
And we covered some of the penalties that Jim Justice's companies have had in the past time, and we talked about them. And he just sometimes just doesn't pay them. Right.
So there are several judgments against him and, you know, back taxes that he owes. And it seems that his companies, which he no longer, it's his family members that now have control of them, but mm-hmm. they're just emptying out bank accounts.
Right.
And not paying them, it seems.
Yep. Which might be what's going on here, too. So, yeah.
Probably so.
All right. All right, Jasmine. Well, the big news from this week and, you know, leading up to yesterday was, of course, the election, the 2018 election, which has now come and gone. You voted, right?
I voted.
You voted. But the bottom line is that Andy Barr defeated Amy McGrath and Democrats picked up two seats in the House of Representatives. Both of those results are bitterly disappointing for Democrats. Republicans actually picked up a seat in the state Senate, which is maybe just salt in the wound. I don't think anybody had any proclivities about any progress being made in the Senate, but that was just extra bad. The cities, however, were a very different story for Democrats. Democrats actually picked up two seats in Louisville's Metro Council, so just as many as they picked up in the whole state house, they picked up in Louisville's Metro Council. And Linda Gorton, who was supported by many Democrats, despite not being a Democrat herself, she easily defeated Ronnie Baston in Lexington.
By quite a bit,
yeah,
too.
It is a substantial margin.
I mean, she had almost half the vote in the primary, so I expected her to win, but I thought it would be closer than it was.
Right. No, I don't know. I thought she would do very well. I didn't think that she would break. What did she get, like 63% of the vote or something like that? I didn't think it would be quite that large, but it was. So there you go. So in the House of Representatives, Democrats really hoped to break the GOP supermajority in the House at the very least, and they were unable to do so. The House, I mean, the election, you know, clearly was a big win for the Republicans despite losing a few seats, but it's a big mess. Nearly a third of the seats in the legislature turned over. So, like, there's going to be 30-some new people that are
right,
in there next
a
year.
A lot.
And the Democrats actually managed to flip 8 GOP seats to the Democratic column. However, the GOP met the challenge and actually flipped 6 formerly held Democratic seats. Which is how that all happened.
Pretty brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. Not great. So there's several stories. I'm going to highlight some four stories about the House of Representatives. So first and foremost, the biggest story, I think, was the close elections. And there were some that were razor thin. In fact, we're talking about a 2-seat gain. That could all be changed by next week. The numbers aren't final likely because there's some that will be re-canvassed. In the re-canvass, usually that's a little bit useless. There's only a couple of votes that go here and there. But in some of these races, a couple of votes here and there will absolutely make a difference.
Yes.
Yeah, there are four seats in this year that were decided by less than 10 votes. Four seats decided by less than 10 votes, which is crazy. There are six seats that were determined by less than 50 votes, which is also kind of crazy. Like, I mean, that it's just a very, very close. So the other two that are more than 10 but less than 50, they're less likely to change hands. I think Sherilyn Stevenson is one of these. She won by like 40-some votes. It's very difficult to pick up 40 votes in a state legislative race. But the other one, which was Morgan Eaves, who lost to Deanna Frazier, that was 24 votes. And that one's more difficult but still could absolutely flip in something like this. Jasmine, the closest election was Jim Glenn, who was running in Owensboro and won by a single vote.
That's insane.
One vote. Yeah, I was talking to somebody about this today, and it's just like, if you lose by one vote, you're calling everybody you know, and you're like, did you vote for me? This is your fault.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. So, okay, the elections that were very, very close included four Democrats who won. So Jim Glenn, like we mentioned, he defeated DJ Johnson by a single vote. Kathy Hinkle defeated Jill York by five votes. Cluster Howard defeated Toby Harrell by seven votes. And Sherilyn Stevenson defeated Bill Farmer by 48 votes. The Republicans picked up two seats in these very close elections. Nancy Tate defeated Jeff Greer. This is a seat that's a little bit east or a little bit west of Louisville. Actually, I think it included a little bit of Jefferson County. But she defeated Jeff Greer by six votes. And then Deanna Frazier, like we mentioned, defeated Morgan Eaves by 24 votes. So those close elections were definitely a big story coming out of yesterday. Another big story, if you ask me, is the big problem of Democrats clustering their votes. So as it stands right now in these kind of unofficial numbers, Democrats hold 39 seats to Republicans 61 after all is said.
It still sounds so bad.
Because it is so bad. It's very bad. So however, in the aggregated popular vote total, if you just add up all the votes for Democrats and all the votes for Republicans, the electorate is actually 54% for Republicans to 46% for Democrats.
Which is slightly better. Better sounding.
You know
actually.
What? That's a respectable showing. And it's much closer. A major driver of this is that 59% of the votes for Democrats came from districts that are at least partially inside of Louisville or Lexington. The GOP only has about 21% of their votes. So that's a massive difference. Democrats, a majority of the vote for Democrats comes from inside two counties, which are the largest counties. Now, those two counties together only make up about a quarter of the population, which is much closer to the 21% that the GOP has. So, you know, the Democrats, their vote is very, very centered. They're clustered in a few seats that are just massive blowouts and not able to compete, whereas, in some of these closer races.
And I think that a lot of Democrats in some of these smaller counties, after college or whatever, they move to these two clusters. Mm-hmm. They move to Lexington or Louisville, maybe because they're outnumbered in their hometown or because of other opportunities. And so I think we lose a lot of people who maybe grow up Democrats
in
some of these smaller counties, too.
Right. You do that. You'd think that it would kind of correct itself in redistricting, but that only happens every 10 years, and the people that get to write the rules are the people who are in charge at the time. So we will absolutely see how that all shakes out.
So when would that be? 2023?
2020. No, 2020. So it's kind of up in the air. There will be another House election in 2020, but, you know, the numbers will come out. I don't know if we'll actually be redistricting for the 2021 map. I think it'll actually probably be for the 2022 map. So we probably have one more election with this map. Okay, another big change is that due to massive turnover in the House, that there are now 9 new Democratic women in the caucus, and there are 3 new Republican women. So, Jasmine, there had been 10 Democratic women in the House previously, but one retired, and a GOP man actually took the seat that Sandy Overly retired out of. Linda Belcher lost again in a general election. Maybe this guy will resign for some reason, and she'll win in a special election.
The thing is that when she lost to Dan Johnson, it was super close. I think it was 300 votes or so, and she got crushed.
Yeah, she did. I don't know anything about Thomas Huff, who defeated her, but maybe he's a good candidate. Maybe he's a good person to run. I don't know why he didn't do it last time. When she lost in that close election, you know, you'd mentioned you knew who Dan Pope Johnson was from going up in Bullitt County.
Yes.
And there's probably some people who are more conservative
that voted for Linda, maybe because of Dan's reputation.
Right. I think that could have been the case for sure. But Linda Belcher definitely lost, and Sandy Overly's seat was taken over by a Republican male. So next year, the Democrats are actually going to have 17 women in their caucus. And as we mentioned earlier, there's only 39 total people in the caucus. That's 44% of the caucus that is made up of women in Kentucky. So that's, you know, there's probably about half of the people in Kentucky are women. So, mm-hmm. And I would actually say probably more than half of Democrats in Kentucky are women. But you know, we're getting closer.
We're getting closer
for the Democratic caucus. Now, the GOP actually held steady with 9 women in their caucus. Like we mentioned, they added 3. But 1 GOP woman was defeated, Jill York. She was one of those people that lost by like 6 votes, so that's kind of up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 other retired and were replaced by men. That's Donna Mayfield and Adia Wichner. So they have, you know, 9 women, significantly fewer in a much larger caucus for Republicans. So big gender gap in Kentucky's legislature, at least in the House next year. The last House story I want to highlight is that retirements certainly seemed to matter. So the GOP, like we mentioned, they managed to pick up 6 seats that had been held by Democrats, but they only actually defeated 2 incumbent Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1 incumbent was only in the legislature by virtue of a special election. That's
Linda Belcher.
Yeah. So she, you know, she was an incumbent and had been there before, but she was only there this time by virtue of that special election. And the other one won by a whopping 5 votes. The other Democrat incumbent that lost by 5 votes. So, you know, Republicans did not do very well against Democratic incumbents. Meanwhile, Democrats, they did actually pick up 2 seats where the incumbent Republican didn't seek elections. Rob Wiederstein in the 11th and Sherrilyn Stevenson in the 88th were pickups for Democrats. But Democrats actually did manage to defeat 6 incumbent GOP members. So that was a big story at the beginning of the cycle, and it really did seem to come back to haunt Democrats.
I was absolutely nervous when all of these retirement announcements started, but I feel like people kept reassuring me, like, no, we're putting good candidates in these races. I think we have a shot, but mm-hmm. it didn't work out that
it
well.
It didn't. Yeah. You know, I think there's a couple of rose-colored glasses, and of course, I do think that a lot of the Democrats that ran in some of these races were good.
Oh, I agree.
And some of them won. I think some of the best ones did win. Patty Minter down in Bowling Green mm-hmm. taking over for Jody Richards. That's a big win. But there were some others that were rather disappointing. Martha Emmons losing out and Paducah being one of them for
and
sure.
And I'm really glad that Rob Wiederstein and Sherrilyn Stevenson ended up pulling out their elections because they were losing at times.
Uh-huh.
And I think that Rob Wiederstein was maybe losing when I stopped paying attention last night. So
yeah.
Those are huge.
Yeah, Henderson kind of went a little haywire on us there, and that brings us to the state senate.
let's talk about that.
And the state senate, literally nothing went right for the Democrats. And you know what? Looking back on it, you know, we might should have seen it, but we didn't, which is fine. And incumbents Dennis Parrott and Robin Webb managed to net substantial victories, incumbent Democrats that were running in for re-election. But none of the envisioned pickup opportunities came to pass for Democrats. And House Representative Robbie Mills, who did not run for re-election, and we mentioned last week, was probably because he was a little scared off of how much Rob Wiederstein had managed to raise out in Henderson. He did manage to pick off Democrat Dorsey Ridley in Henderson County. So
mm-hmm.
that was a pickup for Republicans. The closest that Democrats came to picking up a seat in the state Senate was in Lexington, where Alice Forgy Kerr managed to hang on by 772 votes, which is like 1.5% of all votes cast. So very close election out
and
there.
And that election went back and forth basically the entire night.
Yeah, and that'll be a seat that Democrats certainly target next time around. You know, she's a moderate and did vote against her party a substantial
mm-hmm.
amount and has a lot of good connections with Democrats, actually, in Lexington. So, you know, I don't think she'll switch parties because, you know, why would you switch to the minority party? But, yeah, I think
right.
she'll be a target.
I do think she's a popular candidate in Lexington. So
yeah.
it's a hard Democrat seat to pick up.
It
but
is.
It'll be important next time.
Right. In Warren County, this is really disappointing to me. Jeannie Smith, she fell short by about 4.7% in her bid to unseat Mike Wilson. This is the seat that's just in Warren County.
Yeah, you felt really good about this one, Robert.
I don't know. I felt good about it, but it's tough to win. Warren County, Bowling Green is a nice place, and Patty Minter did manage to win there, but the rest of that county is not as not a college town, right? The next closest was Karen Berg, who lost to Ernie Harris by 5.5%, and then Denise Gray, who lost by 6.5% to Ralph Alvarado out there in Lexington and Points East. Somewhat surprisingly, maybe, Julie Rack Adams came close to losing in Louisville, only defeating Sherry Donahue by a similar 6.7% margin. I saw a few Sherry Donahue signs here in town, but Adams is similar to Alice Forgy Kerr in that she's a popular, moderate
right.
Senate Republican who has some help from some Republican areas. But you know what? These urban districts that are represented by moderate Republicans, I think that, you know, Democrats have kind of hesitated to run their best candidates in those places because they wanted to focus on some of the places where they thought the pickup opportunities were more likely. But I think going forward, you know, really clamping down on these urban areas is a path if Democrats want to have any seats that they're going to have to do that.
Yeah. And I think Julie Rocky Adams' district includes St. Matthews. Mm-hmm. I think younger people are moving there.
Yeah.
It also includes, I think, Linden and Middletown, another like young suburban area.
I mean, you're moving to Linden.
I know.
So
I'm moving to a Republican-held district.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's picking up Democratic voters.
Uh-huh. The loss that stung the most to Democrats, I think, throughout the whole state was Amy McGrath, who...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to record today, Robert.
It's better than it was in 2016, I will say. You were, like, ready to cancel the whole podcast, I think, last time around.
Yeah,
so
let's just hang it up.
Yeah, but it seemed like Amy McGrath was going to win for a really long time. And the margin that she hit her target margin in Lexington. I think they said they wanted to have about a 20,000 vote margin coming out of Lexington, and they thought that could blunt the losses in the rest of the counties if they won by that much. And they did. They won by more than 20,000 votes in Fayette County, but that did not make up the margin from the rest
no.
of the counties.
And it looked so promising in the beginning, and then when it got close and then everyone realized that the last county to report was Scott County, mm-hmm. it was...
You're not great.
We were...
Right.
Admitting defeat at that point,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting, just kind of backing up out of the disappointment from there, when we think about coattails for Amy McGrath, I think they kind of worked both ways. So Sherrilyn Stevenson in the 88th managed to pick up a seat for Democrats, and she's, you know, ensconced in Lexington. And I think that Amy McGrath probably provided some coattails in Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she racked up a 20,000 vote margin in that county. But then you think about someone like Morgan Eves, who's running in Richmond in Madison County. And, you know, I think if Amy McGrath in the 6th District wasn't as big a race, you know, if they ran Nancy Jo Kemper again or something, maybe people aren't as jazzed to get out to vote for Andy Barr, and maybe she actually wins that. She only ended up losing by, like, 24 votes. So
right, and Madison County was a huge target for the Andy Barr campaign. I think that's
yep.
where they sent members of the Trump family
mm-hmm.
to rally, so
and you gotta
yeah,
think
I don't
that,
know.
Yeah, you got to think that made a difference down ballot. But at the same time, they kind of worked both ways, so it's kind of tough to think about. Okay, Jasmine. So one thing that I did want to talk about for a second is how the candidates that we've actually spoken to did. And you know what? We did speak to a lot of winners. We mentioned Sherrilyn Stevenson, Tina Bojanowski's been on the show, Rob Wiederstein's been on the show, Joni Jenkins was on the show, Charles Booker, Neema Kulkarni, Chris Harris, Lisa Wilner, and Terry Branham Clark. So we did. We talked to a substantial number of people that are going to be serving
mm-hmm.
in Kentucky's legislature next year. But most of the people we talked to did manage to lose their elections, unfortunately. Paul Walker, Charlotte Goddard, Paula Sester-Kissick, Dave Suholtz, Amy McGrath, Karen Berg, Latoya Drake, Justin Burley, Rachel Roberts, Emily Ferguson, Ronell Brown, Morgan Eves, Josh Hicks, Carolyn DuPont, Jeannie Smith, Denise Gray, and Stephanie Kingsley. But you know what? I am so glad that all those people ran for office. And I'm really glad that they came on the show and talked to us about it.
Me too. We talked to so many super impressive candidates, and some of them we knew had a huge uphill battle.
Yeah.
Like Stephanie Kingsley, Dustin Burley,
Latoya Drake,
mm-hmm. Paul Walker probably.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
So we knew that we might not see some wins in some of those
yeah.
races. But I was really impressed with the field.
Yeah. I really was impressed with all the people that ran. And I really do hope that, you know, I know that not all of them are going to give it another shot, but I really hope a big chunk of them do. Josh Hicks lost by like 200 votes or something.
Yeah.
And that's another Lexington district that was closer than people
and
thought.
Emily Ferguson's race was pretty close.
Yeah.
Jeannie Smith was super close. So I hope
yeah.
that some of these people run again.
I really do. If you're listening, run again. So just a final note about candidates. It's not clear to me that any specific type of candidate did better than another. This is something, you know, you always have recriminations on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we run more progressive
uh-huh.
people? I can't believe we ran so many progressives. We should run more moderate people. This is Kentucky. Many of the progressive challengers lost, you know, Jeannie Smith and Martha Emmons among them. But, you know, at least some of them won in places that looked a little unexpected. I think people thought Patty Minter was going to lose, especially when some of those results came in the rest of the state. In Bowling Green, she's one of the leaders of the fairness movement in
yeah.
Bowling Green, Kentucky, and won an election to the state house. And then Tina Bojanowski. People kind of had that one targeted, but Phil Moffitt's a pretty entrenched person, and she managed to go in there and beat him as a true progressive. But likewise, some of the more moderate Democrats managed to pick up seats. We mentioned Rob Wiederstein, who is the one person that came onto our show and said he wasn't going to sponsor HB 29. Cluster Howard picked up a seat as of today. And Ashley Lafferty, who ran out in Eastern Kentucky and picked up the Greg Stumbo seat. So those are some more moderate folks who managed to pick up seats. But then again, a few more moderate people lost in seats that really needed to be holds if Democrats were going to make gains, like Linda Belcher and Emily Ferguson, who probably skew more towards the moderate end of the spectrum. So, I mean, the lesson here to me is that if you think you might be too liberal or too moderate to run in your district, just ignore what your gut tells you and run for office. Who knows what's going to happen? And I think that, you know, there's some people that worked really hard and lost, and that sucks. But there's some people that worked really hard and won, and that's awesome. So just if you want to run, run.
Yeah, I don't think there's a science to the type of Democrat that can win.
Yeah.
Thing.
I think thinking through it just keeps people from running, which is not what you want.
And we end up arguing about it all day most of the time.
We have
on Twitter.com.
Yeah, we have both elections in the primary and elections in the general. If you want to run, run. There you go. That's all I have to say about that. So with all that said, Jasmine, who is the happiest person today? My bet is on Matt Bevin. He was in China yesterday. I heard he was not in the state of Kentucky. Jasmine, I think his chances look significantly better today to win re-election than they did yesterday. We saw a massive movement that seemed like there was going to be just 100,000 people there during the session. You know, remember in November, it looked like that there was just a Democratic wave that was going to be there, and it just didn't materialize at the ballot box.
Yep,
it
wasn't
just
there.
Just wasn't there. So we'll see next year if that happens again, you know, but, you know, there is evidence now that the electoral strength of both the teachers movement and the pensioners movement just isn't quite what we expected it to be.
And I also think that there are these Republicans that only dislike Bevin.
Right. Then that's possible. Sure.
I think that there are those people that don't like the way Bevin talks, don't like the things he says, they support teachers, but they're still going to vote Republican.
Right.
99.9% of the time.
Yeah, which brings me to my second person who's probably happy, which is the unnamed Bevin challenger. So if a Republican wants to run against Matt Bevin in the primary, this shows them that there's an opportunity there. Because I think you're right, there are a lot of Republicans who just really don't like Matt Bevin. And if one of them walked in and said, I respect teachers, I think teachers are awesome, I am a teacher potentially, or my family has a lot of teachers in it, that person could beat Bevin and probably walk away with a governorship. If they wanted to challenge Matt Bevin in a primary. And the third person I think that might be happy is Rocky Adkins. Many of the candidates he helped to recruit in Eastern Kentucky made up the Democratic.
Yeah, they did.
He was, of course, in charge of the Democratic recruitment efforts throughout most of the state, helped get people to run throughout the state. But he was very focused in Eastern Kentucky, which is where he is from. There aren't that many paths to a governorship for a Democrat in Kentucky. But running it through Louisville, where his lieutenant governor pick is going to be from, and Eastern Kentucky, where he is from, is a good idea. And I think that he kind of has an inside track there in the general election if he makes it there. So there's some people who are happy, a lot of people who are sad, but there you go. Kentucky's a conservative state, and it remains so. So
right, and I was super disappointed about how these state races turned out. Your election preview last week was giving me some hope, Robert, about all these seats that could flip. So I was super down last night. But to put this into perspective, on a national level, we took the House back.
Democrats won the House,
and
that's right.
A lot of really progressive ballot measures across the country passed.
Uh-huh.
So there are some things to be happy about. But then, you know, remember, we're Kentucky.
Right. No. Well,
we didn't help things.
And you know, I'm just thinking back to your story at the beginning of the show. You know, those two people that are sponsoring the hate crime legislation are Republicans. They're likely going to have some help from Democrats. And you know, this is just the reality that we live in. We live in a conservative state. It's going to be difficult for Democrats to make too many inroads. We're going to have to start thinking creatively about ways, if Democrats want to win back any of these chambers, that we're going to be able to do it. I mean, people are going to have to start having actual conversations to try to change people's minds, I think, is the big thing. We do a lot to try to, like, turn out our base or whatever. The base just isn't there, guys. We're going to have to start, you know, convincing people, talking to people about the issues that we care about and getting them, you know, on our side.
And I think a lot of these candidates did just that.
Yeah.
You know, you heard so much about door knocking and just going and talking to people during this election season, but we need to do more,
yeah,
I guess.
We sure do. All right, well, that's it for the 2018 election. We're going to gear up for, you know, the session coming up here shortly. But right now, we're going to talk to Bruce Maples.
Bruce Maples is the publisher of Forward Kentucky, a media operation that is the progressive voice for Kentucky politics. Bruce has been active in politics in Kentucky for decades, and he's been publishing Forward Kentucky for 2 years. He's also been a candidate. He ran for Louisville Metro Council in 2014 and a party leader. He served on the Louisville Democratic Party Executive Committee, and he's also been an officer with the Metro Democratic Club. Few people in Kentucky are as plugged in as Bruce about the state of politics here, and we're glad that my old Kentucky podcast relationship with Forward Kentucky is growing closer. So, Bruce Maples, welcome to my old Kentucky podcast.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here.
All right, Bruce. Well, first of all, tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming the publisher of a media website. We went over a bit of your biography there. You've done a bunch of different stuff, but now, you know, you do Forward Kentucky. That's, I think, the biggest thing that you do right now. So what made you think that this was an important addition to Kentucky's political landscape?
Well, let's back up a little bit. I've been blogging and writing almost as long as there have been blogs. I started with Blogger back in the day and went to Squarespace and went to WordPress, and that was in 2004, I think.
Right.
And I've always written some about politics, but what's been interesting is that in 2015, I was very upset about the election in 2015 with Matt Bevin winning the governorship. And I thought, well, we need to do something. We need to do this better. And then in 2016, when the Republicans, you know, when that happened, I had already started thinking I wanted to start some sort of organization.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like everybody else and their brother, coming out of the 2016 election, everybody was starting organizations, you know, groups.
Right.
So we had Indivisible starting, we had all these other groups starting, and my original plan was to start an organization called Forward Kentucky. And it was going to be have chapters, and we were going to have meetings, and the whole nine yards. Well, New Kentucky Project happened about the same time with sort of the same vision. And in the meantime, I'm writing, and I've already got this backlog of political stuff that I've written in the past. And what happened over time was that I gave up the idea of any sort of organization, and I focused more and more on the writing and more on the media, because I looked around and I said, there's not a site in Kentucky that does progressive news and commentary pretty much exclusively. Now, there were bloggers out there, and I could name two or three of them, but they weren't doing news.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the commentary they were doing was, I thought, too vitriolic and over the top and not helpful, and that's why they had like three followers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that we need to have a progressive voice that does good explanation of progressive policies, that advocates for progressive policies, but also does some news. Well, what has happened over time, and this is really over this year, what's happened is that people have started coming to Forward Kentucky as their one-stop shop for news and commentary and policy to some extent. And so we are gradually building a reputation for that space. And as far as I know, there isn't another site like it in the state.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about the site. What's the best way to use it, and what are some things about it that you've been the most proud of?
The best way to use it, well, the best way and the way most people do it are two different things. I would prefer that people check it every day. Like for instance, I read some other political sites, and I literally go to them every day and scan the headlines and look for stories. That's how I would prefer that people use Forward Kentucky, because our most recent stories are always on the front page. However, what usually happens is that people see a link to a story in social media and they jump over to read that story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people hang around, but some people jump back out. And so we'll have spikes. We'll have, you know, one story that will just take off. We had one this week, in fact, that Tom Eblen linked to, you know, the opinion columnist.
As the Herald Leader.
He linked to the story. It was already getting a lot of traction. After he linked to it, it went boom. And so we get traffic that way. The best way to use it is, well, the best way is to sign up for email newsletter so that you get the latest stories, you know, in your email. Come to the site, check it out, or follow us on social media, because we promote every story just about on social media. Now, the other thing that we have done is I envisioned it originally as sort of a full-service site for progressives in the state. And so originally we had a calendar where people could post their events, and we had a directory of every progressive organization I could find in the state, probably 400 different organizations of all kinds. Neither of those things got any traffic.
Right.
I mean, people just didn't come use them, you know. Yeah. The calendar got used a little bit during the General Assembly, but once the General Assembly was over, the calendar didn't get used either. So I have recently taken both of those things down, and I'm thinking that pretty much what people want is the news and the commentary and some policy work.
Right.
Now, we've also given, for the election, we did a thing called Election Central, where we had a bunch of resources. We did profiles of all the candidates. We had a thing to find your candidate, find your ballot, GOTV work, so on and so forth. So we did that, and that I was, you're talking about proud of. The profile thing started out as we just did profiles of people who had competitive primaries. That's all we did. But then over the summer, we started adding to them. And then I went to KDP, and I saw that they had some profiles. And I asked them, I said, could we share content? And they said, sure. So they gave me the profiles they had. So we wound up with a profile on almost every Democrat running for House or Senate.
Yeah. I thought we did a good job, but they did much better.
Yeah, they
than
did
we
better.
Did. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were at like 26, but yeah, you guys got in the 90s, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. So we're excited to join My Old Kentucky podcast and My Old Kentucky newsletter to the Forward Kentucky Network. You know, we talked a little bit about this, so I'll let you introduce it. So what can people expect from this partnership going forward?
Well, I have to say that when you two approached me, you know, we'd like to become part of the Forward Kentucky family. I told my wife, I said, wait a minute, I didn't know I had a family. it was very exciting because I have a lot of respect for y'all's work. I think you have one of the best podcasts in the state, maybe in the country, and you do great work with it. And so I was very excited about that. And then it was, okay, how do we make that work so that it works the best for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
We have a podcast. We actually have two podcasts. But because of my time constraints, the load on my time, we have not been able to keep them steady.
Right.
And so having a steady weekly podcast is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that people will begin to connect the two and say, okay, if I subscribe to Forward Kentucky's newsletter or whatever, I also find out about the podcast and vice versa.
Right.
And I think what's really interesting is that the newsletter is just more things that people can sink their teeth into on the website, which is always what we're looking for.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited, too. I think that there's not that many people that are that, you know, engaged in Kentucky politics on the level that that would listen to a podcast every week or go to a website and have it as their homepage or whatever. But I do think that we kind of don't have as much overlap in our audiences as we may think. So I'm excited to introduce some people who may listen to our podcast that don't know anything about Forward Kentucky to your website, because I do think it's really good. It has a lot of high-quality content. And the same way, I think that there's a lot of people at Forward Kentucky. Well, you guys do post us, so we're in there on a regular basis. But, you know, people may not subscribe to the newsletter, and that would be a good opportunity to get people exposed to the unique content that we have in there. So, yeah, it's a pretty exciting time. I'm happy to be doing this.
I have been intrigued with what's happened over the past 18 months. Obviously, when we started, nobody heard of anything.
Right.
But what has happened with Forward Kentucky is that gradually over the past year, more and more people have at least heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have actually read it, but they have at least heard of it. So now if I go somewhere and I introduce myself and I say I'm with Forward Kentucky, many times now they go, oh, sure, I've heard of that, or even I've read your stuff or whatever. So we're gradually building recognition out into the state, which is positive. And having My Old Kentucky podcast as part of it is just going to increase that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And we appreciate the kind words that you said about us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, no, wait a minute. Now, let's be clear. I don't throw bouquets for nothing. And you can, Robert plays in our orchestra that I conduct.
He
and
does.
He can tell you that I don't throw bouquets unless they're deserved.
No participation trophy.
No.
In the orchestra.
No. Yeah, no. Bring your A game.
All right. So Forward Kentucky, as you mentioned, worked super hard this year to profile tons of state legislative races. With state elections coming up this next year, what can readers expect from you guys?
Well, we don't normally endorse in the primary, normally. I said normally because one of the reasons that we did, people have asked me, is Forward Kentucky a nonprofit? No, it's not. I set my company up as a for-profit company, not because I wanted to make money, and I can tell you that I'm not making money. But I set it up as a for-profit company so that we would be free to endorse if we wanted to.
Sure.
Right? So we might endorse in the primary, but mostly what we're going to do is try to cover the candidates very strongly. Mm-hmm. And then once the unlike the state elections where you had every weekend, you probably had 200 get-out-the-vote events or whatever, mm-hmm. there will be one campaign, and we will cover that campaign mm-hmm. pretty thoroughly. We will do a lot of profiles. We will call people out, and we have done that already, including Democrats. I mean, if you do something dumb, we're going to call you out. So we will be covering it very thoroughly, including, I hope, that we will be on in person at a lot of things.
Cool.
One of my goals for 2019 is to do more video and maybe more live video. We did some.
Mm-hmm.
I live streamed on Facebook one of the teacher protests, mm-hmm. and we got pretty good traction from that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to do more of that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, exciting about that. So, you know, for like you mentioned, Forward Kentucky is set up as a for-profit, but, you know, it still needs some help to sustain itself. So if people are interested in helping you guys out, how can they do that? And, you know, you haven't mentioned this yet, but what's the website at? What's the URL?
Oh, sorry. ForwardKY.com.
Uh-huh.
ForwardKY.com. Fortunately, we've been around long enough now that and our SEO has worked well enough, search engine optimization has worked, that I think if you go put Forward Kentucky into Google, we'll pop up. You know, we'll be there at the top. Now, there is another site called Kentucky Forward, which is an online newspaper in Cincinnati.
Weird.
So don't go there.
That seems confusing.
Yeah, well, forwardky.com is the website. And we're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter, and like that. What they can do, if they believe in the work, is they can go become a patron. It's right there on the homepage. Get involved. There's a thing, become a patron. Patrons do a monthly subscription of $3, $6, or $9. There are different perks that come with those. But what's interesting is I sent a poll to all our patrons because I had done some of the perks and not gotten a lot of traction. And almost all of them said in the poll, I don't care about the perks. I'm doing it because I'm trying to support you and the work you're doing. So I'm like, great. but that's what they can do.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming in. We're excited to join. Well, our newsletter this week will have a nice Forward Kentucky section. And going forward, we're going to load onto your system, and we're excited about that. So thank you so much for coming in.
I'm excited about it, too, and thank you for having me.
Right. Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @MyOldKYPod. We have a Facebook page that you can like. You can listen to our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice. We also have a newsletter, which you can subscribe to at tinyletter.com/MyOldKentuckyNewsletter. That comes out on Fridays, and you can see all of these election results this coming Friday in our newsletter. And finally, we have a Patreon that you can sponsor us. We love the Patreon subscribers that we have. Thank you so much. But more of you can subscribe if you'd like to at patreon.com/MyOldKentuckyPodcast.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week.